Continuing our study of Sefer Shmuel Beis, and we're towards the end of Perek Yud Tes. We're up to Pasuk Lamed Beis, Yud Tes, Lamed Beis, 336 in the Art Scroll. And David's in the process of coming back to Yerushalayim after the rebellion with Avshalom has been taken care of. And the most recent Pesukim that we read through was talking about David's interaction with Mephibosheth, who was the son of Yonatan, who was handicapped. Most probably that conversation takes place when they're closer to Yerushalayim. But we're kind of going a little bit out of order. We're going back because he's about to have an interaction with an individual named Barzillai HaGiladi, who we'll read about in Pasuk Lamed Beis, who we read about previously. And that is clearly taking place, you know, kind of as David is crossing the Yarden, but prior to his coming back to Yerushalayim. So Pasuk Lamed Beis reads, Barzillai HaGiladi, Yarad Mi Roglim. So it was a Barzillai, is his name. He came from Gilad, at least originally. Now he came down from a place called Roglim. Vayavor Es HaMelech HaYarden, he crossed the Jordan with the king. L'shalcho Es HaYarden. To kind of send him on his way. He was escorting the king over the Yarden. Who was Barzillai? So we read about Barzillai in Perek Yud Zayin, that when David was on the run and he was already on the other side of the Jordan with his whole camp that he had with him, which was many members of his family and the 600 men who were with him, he needed provisions, and Barzillai was one of the individuals who stepped forward in the midst of the rebellion of Avshalom, siding with David and providing David with provisions, as we're about to read in Lamed Gimel. Barzillai zaken ma'od. Barzillai was very old. Chazal have a perspective that perhaps he aged while his behavior in regards to David was proper. Perhaps his behavior in other areas was not so proper, and that's why he aged kind of quickly, even though we're told his actual age, which for Tanakh purposes is definitely on the older side. It's not, you know, the Tanakh tells he was Ben Shmonim Shana, 80 years old, which is for Tanakh standard, you know, like 80 is the new whatever, you know, 80 is not so, it's not so old, but from Tanakh standard, it's considered to be old. So he's 80 years old, and we'll see why. You know, why are we being told his age? There's nothing about what he did previously that would need us to know his age. But when we're about to see the interaction that he has with David, knowing how old he is important. V'hu chilkal es hamelech b'shivaso b'machanayim. The word chilkal, so the Metzudas Tzion points us to perhaps one of the first times in Tanakh that it's used in the context of Yosef and his brothers. When Yosef was telling his brother, before his brothers knew who he was, he mentioned the fact that he would be able to, or as he revealed himself, he said, you know, I'll be able to sustain you. Kalkala means to be sustained with nourishment, with food. That's why it makes it into, right, ala mechia ve ala kalkala, it makes it into the bracha that we talk about, you know, sustenance and nourishment. So v'hu, this is Barzillai, chilkel es hamelech, he sustained the king, b'shivaso b'machanayim, when the king was living in Machanayim. Machanayim was the place, or the region where David was with his people. Why did he do that, or how was he able to do that? Those are multiple ways to understand the next phrase. Ki ish gadol hu me'od. He was a great person. A great man. So the initial understanding is financially. Rashi just says one word, ish gadol hu me'od ba'osher, with monetary wealth. So that you understand, how do you provide provisions for so many hundreds and hundreds of people? Well, if you're an extremely wealthy person, you can do it. Ish gadol hu me'od, it could also imply in terms of his character, or his decision to step up and take care of David, maybe you would say at any time, and especially now when David was really... when David was really in need, for him to public, you know, it's a Avshalom could have found out about it, and had the rebellion gone not the way of David, you know, you could have, you know, Avshalom could have made the argument that Barzillai was you know, morayed with his, you know, against Avshalom, and that could be punished. But Barzillai was an ish gadol; he was willing to he had some principles and he was willing to side with David. So now comes what appears to be a reward, Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Vayomer HaMelech El Barzilai. So the king responds back to, says to Barzilai, Ata Avor Iti. You should cross over with me. V'chilchalti Oscha Imadi B'Yerushalayim. And I will provide sustenance for you together with me in Yerushalayim. So it's clearly the Tanakh is playing off the same word, the chilchalti, that David is trying to repay. David is trying to reward. You took care of me, and now it's my turn. I'm heading back to Yerushalayim. I'm going to be the united king over all of Israel. So I should be taking care of you. You have an open invitation, and we've seen this before, where the king extends an invitation to kind of be a member of his court. That was something that he had extended to Mephibosheth, who we read about last time, and that it was considered to be something of honor. There's the possibility that he was asking him to kind of be an advisor, to be part of his council, or it may just be a reward for having taken care of David. Now it's David's turn to return the favor. And while you might have expected, based on our previous understanding of Ki Ish Gadol Hu Ma'od, that he was very, very wealthy, so why does a very, very wealthy person doesn't need the invitation of the king, doesn't need to be supported? But it's still, so you may have expected that Barzilai would say no, based on the fact that, you know, kind of like, no, thank you, but no thank you. But it still would be, it's not just about the fact that if you eat at the table of the king, you don't have to buy your own dinner. It's considered to be something of stature. It's considered to be something, you know, that people would want.
It's an honor, right?
It's an honor. And it's kind of a lifelong honor, or at least as long as the king lives. Pasuk Lamed Hei. Vayomer Barzilai Lamelech. So Barzilai answered back to the king. And we're going to see he's quite self-deprecating. He says, "Kama yimei shnei chayai? How many years are the years of my life? In the sense of how much life do I have left? Ki ele es hamelech Yerushalayim, that I should come up with the king to Yerushalayim." Almost saying like, how long would I even have this great honor that you're offering me? How long would I really take advantage of it? Pasuk Lamed Vav. Ben Shmonim Shana Anochi Hayom. I am 80 years old today. I don't think you have to understand that's like his birthday, but he's 80. He's saying I'm currently 80 years old. It's interesting that people had they don't have calendars, but they have a wherewithal of what here we're talking about a regular person who knows how old he is, which is I think it's significant, because there definitely have been cultures and times people have come. I know some people who came from Iran, and they didn't exactly know how old they were. They didn't have records like we have, and they kind of had an approximate age. I guess you could. I mean, I don't know. You'd have to do some real study of all of Tanakh. When he says Yishmonim Shana, is that perhaps a range? Could you maybe read that as he's in his 80s? As opposed to, I'm 80 years old, exactly. But ben shmonim shana anochi hayom. Ha'eda bein tov l'ra. Do I know the difference between good and bad? So the rest of the pasuk is kind of, is going to be speaking about physical pleasures, whether they be taste of food, of drink, of listening, kind of the senses of taste, and maybe smell and hearing, which are senses that can be dulled as a person ages, right? A person can lose some of their hearing, can lose some of their taste. So there are some of Farshim that understand the ha'ida being tov l'ra as a heading. Do I know the difference between good quality of food and not good quality of food? Tov is talking, is or music. Tov is going to be saying good of those kind of physical enjoyments of life. L'ra, to bad, bad food, bad music, bad physical pleasures. The other way to possibly understand this phrase is that it's actually talking more, if David was inviting him there for advice, so Bein Tov L'ra could be just referring to normal life, being how clear would I be in my moral decisions if I'm getting old. Now, we know he very recently made a very clear moral decision to support David. Although maybe someone would say it was irrational to support David. It was dangerous to support David. It would have made more logical sense for him to support. We're all thankful that he supported David, but maybe that wasn't. Maybe that was the age speaking. But presumably it's the first explanation that this is a heading for the rest of the pasuk of Im Yitam Avdacha Eis Asher Ochal V'Eis Asher Ashta. If you're does your servant, meaning he's talking about himself, know how to taste food that he eats and drink that he drinks? Im Eshma Od Bekol Sharim V'Sharos. If I hear the sound of the music of the singers of male singers and female singers, do I know what's good and what's not? Would I enjoy it? Why does your servant have to be a masa? Why does your servant have to be a burden upon the king, upon my master, the king? So Barzillai is trying to say, he might even be saying a number of points. He might be saying, I'm not going to receive you're trying to give me a great amount of benefit. I'm past that stage. I won't be able to benefit from what it means to enjoy the king's delicacies, whether they be food, whether they be drink, whether they be the entertainment. And also he says, why should I be a burden upon you? It's going to be a lot for you to have to take care of me, perhaps as I age. It's a burden, and why should I do it for you?
Is it just him or like his household?
So it seems to be this is like David's offering one ticket. One ticket for one person. And he's kind of saying, I'm not going to appreciate it, and therefore you shouldn't even extend it to me. Which, you know, as he's about to say in the next pasuk, he might just want to go home. He might just want to be kind of aging, and he speaks about dying in a more peaceful, relaxed place, which is at home, mm-hmm. And not in the whole, you know, craziness that exists in the palace. Pasuk Lamed Zayin says, "Kimat ya'avor avdecha sayardin es hamelech." For a bit, kimat. For a bit, I will cross over. Your servant will cross over the Jordan with you. V'lama yigmaleni hamelech hagmula hazos. But why should the king? Right, we talk about Hashem being a gomel chasadim tovim. Gomel means to reward. Why should the king extend this reward to me? Meaning, I'll escort you a little bit. Pasuk Lamed Ches, Yashav na avdecha v'amus be'iri. Then please allow your servant, meaning me, to return. V'amus be'iri, I will eventually die. He says it straight. I'm trying to say it nice, eventually. That I will die in my city. Im kever avi ve'imi, and the place of the burial place of my father and my mother. Right? We've seen this mentioned many times. They had family burial plots, not like a big cemetery with the way we have it, that sometimes families are buried together, but kind of on the family property. They would have family burial plots. So that's kind of the end of his speech of saying, I shouldn't be the one coming. However, right, you're offering me one ticket. V'hine avdecha chimham. That's a name. Chimham. Mm. Behold, your servant chimham, yavor im adoni hamelech, should pass with my master, the king. V'aseh lo, es asher tov beinecha, and do to him what's good in your eyes. I would like him to take my place. This individual, Chimham, Rashi says, Benohaya. It was the son of Barzillai. So at this point, we see that it's not necessarily that Barzillai is being selfless. Right. He's saying, I appreciate this kind of reward in the bigger picture. I'm not the one for it right now, so therefore take my son. He'll have my place. My son is younger. So a number of the arguments that Barzillai made, right? Barzillai said, how many years do I have left? Well, my son, presumably, according to the way things are supposed to go, my son will be alive much longer than me. So this privilege that you're offering, you know, will get we'll get more out of it. We'll actually, a member of our family will be there longer. Then in terms of what's going, the experience of as it happens, the quality, right? The quantity will be longer and the quality will be better if my son is there in my place. And that's his request. Mm-hmm. And again, David's on the side of trying to give back. So it's always important if you're trying to give back to someone, you want to give the appropriate gift. And you don't want to do something that the person doesn't want. That what does that accomplish? Mm-hmm. So David has no reason to fight on it. Pasuk Lamed Tes, Vayomer HaMelech, Iti Ya'avor Chimham, with me, Chimham will cross over. V'ani Eselo Esatov Be'inecha, and I am going to do to him Esatov Be'inecha, the good in your eyes. V'chol Asher Tivcha Alai Eselach, anything you choose for me, I shall do for you. Meaning, David, am willing to do for you anything. And if what it means to do for you is to reward your son, you know, matov manayim, it's great, and I'll reward your son. And we kind of, we hear the conclusion of that in Pasuk Mem. Vayavor chol ha'am es ha'yardein, the entire people who were with David crossed over the Yardein, v'hamelech avar, and the king crossed over. Vayishak ha'melech lebarzilai vayavarcheu, the king gave a kiss to Barzilai, and he blessed him. Vayoshev lemkomo, and he returned to his place. He returned to his place, meaning Barzilai went home. He went back to Roglim.
So where's Roglim? On the like Jordan side of the Jordan River?
I don't know for sure.
So where's David is crossing?
He's crossing from what we call the East Bank. And he's crossing into the West Bank.
Right.
He's crossing from what we call Jordan into what we call Israel.
Right.
You see Roglim? I don't know how famous it is. Fine.
Okay. So this was politically smart of Barzilai to get his son like ensconced in the palace.
Yeah, and presumably it's going to be much. It's long term.
Right.
It's long term.
But who's to say the son's as good as the father?
Right.
That's a question, really meaning, according to the approach that it was for advice, you raise that. If it's just reward, so then it's almost like, why was Mephibosheth there? Mephibosheth wasn't necessarily deserving of it, but since he was Yonatan's son, and he's Shaul's grandson,
right.
You know, in that case, he's Shtekel Mishpacha, he's his best friend's son. Right. So that, you know, so he extends, but if it's for reward, then you could understand him. But if it, you're right, you know, if it's for advice, you know, any, you know, if we, the way we understood that, that Ish Gadol, that it might be talking about that he was, you know, at least in some areas of his life of good character, you know, who's to say the son?
Right. I mean, just because the father's good doesn't mean that.
Right. David knows that very well. David knows that, unfortunately, very well.
Right. And it doesn't say advice.
Right. So presumably it's just to have a seat at the table, whatever
the king, he fed, right? He said.
And you know it could have very well be, you know, what was the number of people who were in a non-advisory role who had a seat at David's table?
Tons.
Right, could be.
Like in the old movies, you know, like you see, like the king had those big.
Right. So how does it presumably it's maybe it's somewhere in between. It's something. I'm saying it's not. No, but right. But it's not important. It's not always important for us to know that. Here, this is all within the context of the rebellion with Absalom and kind of, you know, tying up loose ends. Right? There's the loose end of Shimei ben Gera, who had cursed, and how David deals with him in terms of making peace. There's the loose end of Mephibosheth, because Mephibosheth had his servant Ziva had said an evil report about him, and David believed it. And here, so this happens to be of all the loose ends, this is the most positive. Here is someone who helped David, and now David is in a position to pay back, and David pays back the reward. So what had happened was that David was a little bit nervous, and we had seen this expressed in the pasuk, that the other tribes of Israel were recognizing him, were coming to terms that he should return to be the united king over all the tribes. But his own tribe, Yehuda, had been a little bit lax, and he had sent word to the two Kohanim, to Tzadok and Avyasar, who were in Yerushalayim, saying basically, you know, get Amasa, who had been on the side of Absalom, and really bring the tribe of Yehuda over to me, that my own tribe, why should my own tribe be last? So that sounds like a great plan. But in some ways it didn't go as smoothly. Pasuk Mem Aleph. Vayavar HaMelech Gilgala. The Melech crossed over to Gilgal. We had said that there was significance, the fact that when the other tribes gathered in Gilgal, before they crossed over the Jordan, Gilgal was a place that Shmuel had chosen to rededicate and kind of coronate Shaul for the second time in a more positive and public way. So Vayavar HaMelech HaGilgal, he came over to Gilgal. Vechimham Avar Imo, and just to round out from the last pasuk, this Chimham was with him. Vechol Am Yehuda, and all of the people of Yehuda, Heviras HaMelech, they crossed over with the king. Vegam Chatzi Am Yisrael. And also Chatzi Am Yisrael, which is a little bit of a strange phrase. Mm-hmm. What's clear is that we're talking about two distinct groups, mm-hmm. Am Yehuda and Am Yisrael. So Am Yehuda is easy. That's referring to the members of the tribe of Yehuda. Am Yisrael is going to refer to everyone else. Whether or not it includes, right, we had already heard that there were 1,000 people from the tribe of Binyamin who had gathered there. They were with Shimi ben Gera. Who are they considered? Are they under the umbrella of the Am Yisrael? Are they separate? But the word Chatzi, that's the strange word.
They don't refer to, it's back to Am Yisrael being Am Yisrael as beforehand when it was Absalom.
He was
Yisrael and
right. So,
David was the rest. So now.
Right. So now it's Yehuda verse. Now it's the tribe of Yehuda united, meaning before in the time of Absalom's rebellion, they have many members of the tribe of Yehuda that are siding with Absalom. So now it's back to Yehuda verse, the rest of the tribes. With perhaps Binyamin in a little bit of parentheses. The word chatzi throws you off. The Radak and others say that chatzi in Tanakh doesn't have to be half. It doesn't have, right? If you read that chatzi Am Yisrael, you're thinking, whoa, the entire Jewish people, whatever that is, whatever million number that is, cut that in half, and that's who's gathered here. It sounds rather large. So the Radak and others understand that the word chatzi in Tanakh could just mean some. It's a little deflating because you think half. It could just mean some. The way the Radak says, kitzat, a little bit. Some type of perhaps a representation from the other tribes. It wasn't everyone, but it was some type of representation. Was it people from all the tribes, like, you know, 500 from each tribe? Or was it, you know, basically some of all of Klal Yisrael, but maybe you didn't have every tribe there? I don't necessarily think it makes a difference. But the Pasuk is already describing that There are two distinct groups. There's the Am Yehuda and the Am Yisrael.
How many people is this in general? Like if it were everybody.
Oh, what was the Jewish population at this time?
Yeah, about.
I have no idea.
But thousands, 10,000?
Jewish population, they leave Egypt with 2.5 million people, easy. Meaning because we have a count of the men who are between the ages of 20 and 60, and that's mm-hmm. 600,000. So you have to imagine the men under 20 and over 20 perhaps could be another 600,000.
Right.
Or even if you want, right, at least the women should be matched, right? You at least have 600,000 women.
Right.
Then you probably have 600,000 children.
Right.
And then you could have 600,000 people over the age of 60. So you could have, it's easy to have four groups of 600,000.
Right.
In terms of numbers. So that would, four groups of, well, that would be 2.4 million people. Right. So that's who left. That's who left Egypt.
And it got bigger.
I mean, you just have to do...
Well, they were in wars.
Right.
People die.
Right, right. But I would imagine...
What?
Kids are born.
Yeah, kids are born.
Right. I would imagine the... you know, I don't know what's normal.
Yeah. Now, you know? Like, all these people are moving back and, like, are traveling?
Yeah. Okay. Traveling by foot. Camel. Horse. Right. Donkey. So we have these two groups, Pasuk Membeis. V'hine kol ish Yisrael ba'im el ha-melech. Whatever group the previous Pasuk described as being from Am Yisrael, mm-hmm. so that group, Now they're called Ish Yisrael. Why there's a difference, I don't know. They came to David, or their representatives came to David. And they said to the king, Madua genavucha achenu, Ish Yehuda. Why have our brothers, the men of Yehuda, why have they stolen you? Right? It happens to be that when the Torah uses the word geneva, like in the Aseres Hadibros, in the Ten Commandments, so the Ten Commandments are pretty severe. So when you look at lo tirtzach, not to commit murder, so the punishment for committing murder is the death penalty. Lo tinaf, not to commit adultery, so the punishment for committing adultery is the death penalty. Lo tignov, so if you read, you know, it's hard to read that as petty theft. If you steal a little smartphone, that's the same. That's in the same list as lo tirtzach and lo tinaf. So Chazal explained that lo tignov in the Ten Commandments actually refers to kidnapping, to stealing a person. So that in Tanakh language, geneva specifically could refer to stealing a person. In rabbinic language, so we know that there's a we try to explain the difference between what's the difference between a ganav and a gazlan. So the difference in rabbinic literature is the punishment. That for someone who's a ganav, there's the punishment is more, the monetary punishment is more severe than someone who's a gazlan. Someone who's a gazlan believes that they're a real emistic, a thief, and they steal in front of the eyes of God and in front of the eyes of man, because a gazlan is by daytime when people can see. A ganav only steals at night because they're worried about the eyes of man, but they're not worried about the eyes of God. That they, in the secrecy of night, they'll sneak in to the bank and rob the bank. But when everyone's there, they wouldn't do that. So we kind of punish the ganav more. But in the psukim, ganav can refer to people, and here they're saying ginavucha, they stole you. They're monopolizing you. It's like they're claiming you, David, as theirs when we're trying to claim you also as ours. What's interesting is that they use the word achenu. You would have expected that they're trying to voice displeasure. That's like a nice term. They're trying to really voice that they're upset with the Ish Yehuda, with the men from Yehuda. And again, why the pasuk by both switches by calling them Am Yehuda and Am Yisrael to now Ish Yisrael and Ish Yehuda. I don't know what the significance of that is. But they say, our brothers, the men of Yehuda, they're stealing you. They're kind of taking you, right? That they were the ones who crossed, right? That they brought the king and his entire household across, and they had all of David's men with them. Yehuda has stepped, they're not sharing you. That's kind of that their claim is, and then, you know, what comes out of that? What comes, if you're not going to be the king for all of us, then why are we here? Why are we interested? And so on the one hand, you know, it's definitely something positive in the sense that they are voicing that they want to have something to do with David.
Right.
But how it's taking place, how it's taking place is clearly not positive. And whenever we talk in the next few psukim, spend a lot of time talking about this disagreement that exists, or the differences that exist between the tribe of Yehuda and all the other tribes. So we kind of know we all know the future, that in the future, and it's approximately like some 43, 44 years from this story, is where the kingdom splits into two and is never repaired. The original perhaps plan was that maybe a couple of maybe 30 to 40 years after the kingdom split, there was an opportunity for the kingdom to be brought back, but at that point, the king in Yehuda was not deserving of it. So the kingdom split, and it has not been repaired ad hayom hazeh. Until today, whatever, we're talking like 3,000 years later, we've never had all 12 tribes identified and under one, either king or whatever, what's the government called now? It's a democracy?
Where?
In Israel. Israel? It's just, it's a regular democracy. Does it have like a qualitative word? Just democracy. Like
parliamentary democracy? No.
Right. It's complicated how it all works.
Sure.
Yeah, but you know, so but even now we don't know, we don't have the tribes are not identified, so we may have representatives from all the tribes, but actually when the Pasuk tells us in Sefer Vayikra, when it talks about the context of the mitzvah of Yovel, the 50th year, mm-hmm. So it mentions that Yovel, it says the phrase, right, ukrasam deror, you'll proclaim liberty, the pasuk that's written on the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, like la'aretz, for the land, ulechol yosheveha alah, all of its inhabitants upon it, meaning the land. And so we learn that in order for us to keep Yovel, we have to not only have all of Klal Yisrael, or at least the majority of Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, but we need to have each tribe has to be in its appropriate place. That the people who are from Asher need to be in Asher. The people who are, so even right now we're at, I think after the most recent Yom HaTzmaut, every year in Yom HaTzmaut they put out the statistics of how we're doing in terms of numbers in Israel. So currently it's a blessing and an unfortunate fact. Israel is now the country in the world that has the most Jews of any singular country. That's a good thing for Israel. It's not such a good thing about the American community because it's kind of highlighting that we're shrinking here, not because everyone's moving to Israel. Kind of more unfortunately, the assimilation piece. But I think we're at 44%. 44% of all Jews in the world live in Israel. So we're close to breaking the 50% mark, which on the one hand could bring up the conversation of Yovel because you have the majority of Jews. And then that actually, the Yovel conversation makes the Shemitah, we only keep Shemitah when you keep Yovel. So Shemitah we keep now, but only Midrabanan, which has some leniencies. If it was Midaraisa, it could be. But we don't just need the majority of Klal Yisrael there. We need Klal Yisrael, each tribe, living in its place.
What do they count as Jews in America or outside of Israel?
Probably people who just identify. There are probably a whole bunch of people who are in that group who are halachically not Jewish.
I mean, saying they would include right. them because it's coming from Israel, or would they not?
I think in the numbers they do. They just work with like census. They probably work with like the United States census numbers, things like that. But then there are a whole bunch of people who aren't Jewish who are, right? There are people walking around New York who are Jewish. They just don't know it.
Right. That's what I'm wondering. Like, where are they getting the numbers from?
So you have to, Hashem knows the numbers, and hopefully we all go back soon. But the history is going to be that they're going to split. We're here 40 some odd years before the kingdom splits, and you already see tension between these two groups, and it seems that the tension is there always, because we already had, I mean, it's almost like we didn't understand why, but way back in the beginning of the Sefer, when Shaul becomes king in Perek Yud Aleph, right, he becomes king in Yud, but then in Yud Aleph is when Nachash, who was the king of Ammon, comes and attacks Yavesh Gilad, and Shaul is able to get this huge, like 300,000 troops. There, out of nowhere, it said there were 300,000 troops from Israel and 30,000 from Yehuda. Why would they be separate? It seems like this the unfortunate seeds of disunity were there for literally decades, if not, you know,
from
maybe
the beginning.
Yeah, and maybe who knows? Maybe somehow it goes back to Yehuda and Yosef and those you know, those two models of types of leaders, and it goes back to two wives, to Rachel. I mean, we're getting there. We're going to get there in Parashat Shavua very soon. But the two wives and the sons of Rachel versus the sons of Leah.
Well, the four wives, really.
Right, but they step up, right. In terms of leadership, they look at Rachel meaning Yosef, and then from Leah being Yehuda. So it's kind of, you know, you're almost asking a question like, it seems like we were doomed from the start to have this disunity, which is still plaguing us, even though we're now all called Yehudim. We're all called Jews because we come from the tribe of Judah. We don't come from the tribe of Judah. We're the remnants of the southern kingdom, which was Yehuda and Binyamin. But every Benjaminite became known as a Yehudi, right? The first Jew who's called a Jew is Mordechai. We have our Scotland residents just mentioned it, right? Ish Yehudi Hayab Shushan Abira Shimon Mordechai, and he calls him at the end of the pasuk. He's called the Yemini because he's a Benjaminite, but he's called a Yehudi because he came from Judea. That's our name. But we have so much problem with unity, and it's almost like, I don't know. You ask these questions, you don't find the answers. But this is, it's so apparent. So here we have the men from Yisrael are complaining that the men from Yehuda are monopolizing David, specifically at a time when there's supposed to be, great unity. Pasuk Mem Gemel, Vayan kol ish Yehuda, al ish Yisrael. So now the men of Yehuda, now, they came to David with their complaint, and David doesn't respond back. I don't know what to make of that.
Well, he wasn't a good parent, really, David. He's not good at this stuff.
I don't know. He had a son, Shlomo HaMelech, that turns out, very well.
Yeah, but I mean...
I don't know, yeah. But this is, he's good at being king. Overall, he's good at being king.
He conquers
the world. So, Vayan Kolish Yehuda Al Ish Yisrael. The men of Yehuda answer back to the men of Yisrael. And they say, Kikar of HaMelech Eli. They basically say the king's related to us. The king's one of us. Now, how do you take that if you're on the side of... Is that really like a winning argument? Why are you so angry over this? Over this matter. Have we eaten from the king? Does he do for us? The Mitzvah Simon says this phrase is understood as like gifts. Does the king give us gifts? Which is maybe highlighting what is the fear? What is the fear when you're the tribes of Israel and you think that the king is being monopolized by one tribe? What's your fear? Your fear is that he's going to treat one tribe differently. He won't conscript their children into the army. He won't tax them. There'll be some benefit to knowing the king, right? Usually that's what people think, right? We like to think amongst ourselves, and hopefully it's true, that when it comes, Rosh Hashanah time, the fact that we don't just die, the fact that we know our king that is judging us, we hope that gets us a little bit better favor in the court case, because we know the king. Knowing the king, right? Everyone always tries to get connections, right? It's not what you know, it's who you know. Right. It almost sounds like the men from Yehuda are by saying what we don't get, they're implying that must be what you're thinking. You must think that we're in with the king, and therefore we partake of his food, and we get gifts, we get special treatment. We don't get special treatment. Why are we close to him? He's mishpacha. He's closer.
We didn't see that before the rebellion. There was no complaints, that he favored the people from Yehuda.
Right. Seemingly with Avshalom, we also have, we have an even number of people from the tribe of Yehuda recognizing Avshalom and rejecting David, than from the other, it could be even equal from the other tribes
why now? Did this all stem from where it says that everyone from Yehuda crossed with him, but just part of Yisrael?
Maybe. Okay.
Is that the whole
maybe, but David had extended that invitation. David was trying to make sure that he didn't see Yehuda stepping up to the plate as much as the other. So it's almost like he overshot what he was going for.
Right.
And now that the men from Yehuda the numbers from Yehuda are overwhelming the numbers from Klal Yisrael, and it's like maybe some type of numbers game. When your question of why now? I don't know, unless this is just meaning they feel that this is, since this is like the This is like the beginning all over again. The beginning of a monarchy all over again. It has to start out on the right foot.
And then they know that he doesn't necessarily have to be the king. Somebody could revolt, and they could have him overthrown again.
Right.
So now he has to really, you know, make them happy.
Right.
It's like that threat over them that, you know.
Right. That definitely is possible. Now, they.
What does it say he was worried about who? That not all of Yehuda was with him? Or was it like further back? It wasn't just in the Pesukim we just did, was it?
Yeah, it was last time.
Oh,
if
okay.
You go back, Perek, go back to page 330 in your book.
Oh.
In Perek Yotes Pasuk Yod Beis, where the king said to the message should be living in Zikni Huda, Lama Siu Achoranim Lashiv El Melech Beiso. Why should you be last? So it's almost like he's overshot it. Because now there's so many.
It's like he treated them special, asking why.
Well, it wasn't special. He was saying like, you guys should really get on board. And then they really got on board, but they got on board too energetically or too. They showed up in such numbers that they've overwhelmed the tribe of the other tribes that they feel now deficient in terms of their relationship with the king.
Maybe what that means going forward. Maybe they wanted an invitation.
Maybe. Maybe.
No.
So Pasuk Mem Dalet, which is the last Pasuk in the Perek, but it really the story keeps going. Vayan Ish Yisrael Es Ish Yehuda. So now the men of Israel answer back to the men of Yehuda. Vayomer, and he said it's in singular, but it's talking about the whole group. Eser Yados Li Bamelech. I have 10 portions in me, Bamelech, in the king. I have 10 portions in the king, which is not necessarily talking about David. It's talking about the position of king. Because then it kind of mentions Vigam Bedavid. And also in David, Ani memcha, I am more than you. Umadua hakilo sani. So why do you slight me? Velohaya devari rishon li lahashiv es malki. And why wasn't it my word that caused the return of my king? Which is kind of a pause. And there's a pause in the pasuk by Malki. So their approach is saying, we have 10 portions in the monarchy more than you do because we have numbers. Mm-hmm. We have 10 tribes. Right. And here they may be, right, if you separate they may not be talking about Binyamin now.
Right.
Which happens to be foreshadowing in the future. It's Yehuda and Binyamin are the ones who stay on the side, who stay together, and it's the 10 other tribes, excluding the tribe of Levi, because Levi's always treated, you know, themselves, and it's usually understood that most of the tribe of Levi, meaning the Kohanim and the Levium, most of them sided with the southern kingdom, but some sided with the.
Did they have land? Like, they didn't own their own land, did they?
They get 42 cities. There were 42 cities known as Ari Levium, plus the 6 cities of refuge, the 6 Ari Miklat, 3 on the east bank of the Jordan River and 3 on the west bank of the Jordan River. Those 48 cities were places where Levium could live. They was reserved. But they're saying that we have, right, you're trying to, you men from Yehuda are trying to tell us that you're related to the king. And their claim back is we have more of a claim to the monarchy because we're 10 tribes and you're not. We're 10 tribes more, right? And maybe it's implying, you know, that right, we have the right to maybe have a say in who our king is, and maybe it's not coming from the right tribe right now. While 10 years ago we'd have maybe thought that's an impossibility, but in light of a recent rebellion, it's doable, it's possible. Now they're not implying that, but they're saying we're not being treated with the respect that we think that we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Which whenever you are in such a situation like that, you know, usually most of us would find ourselves in a situation with an individual as opposed to like 10 tribes of people. But if a person feels slighted, mm-hmm. the only way to appease them is to give, you know, they won't be appeased unless they get exactly what they want. And anything short of that, they're not going to be able to be appeased. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to give anything or to even be apologetic, then you're not going to get anywhere. And so we have both groups are being very stubborn in terms of their arguments. And the pasuk ends, "Vayikesh devar ish Yehuda midvar ish Yisrael." The words that came, right? Vayikesh, the Mitzvah Tzion says, is milashon kasheh, hard or harsh. That the words of the ish Yehuda were more harsh than the words of ish Yisrael, which implies that the conversation went a little further. This verbal argument got very heated. And what has happened is that what's supposed to be a most joyful time of David coming back to Yerushalayim as the united king of all the tribes. So David has succeeded in getting all of Yehuda united, but he all of a sudden has begun to fail at the other tribes. Mm-hmm. And therefore the moment, even though it's crazy, the moment is ripe for someone else to rebel against David, which is the last thing that David needs, the last thing that David would want, the last thing that maybe David is expecting to happen. Mm. Now, in all of these psukim leading up to, that's why I think it's a pretty terrible place to have the end of a perek. The fact that the perek ended there, so we know we've mentioned this so many times. The prakim they're not from us, so we use them because they're there and they're good, I guess, mostly. Right, you have to give a test on something in school. So, we're having a test on Perek Chaf. We've only heard about we don't know what's going on with the tribe of Binyamin in this whole debate. The troublemaker who's about to step forward in Perek Chaf Pasuk Aleph is from the tribe of Binyamin. So, how do you understand someone who's going to kind of launch a mini rebellion from the tribe of Binyamin? So either the tribe of Binyamin was along with this, when it says Ish Yisrael, it's referring to Binyamin as well. Or you have a man from Binyamin, right? As a group, the tribe of Binyamin could still be harboring ill feelings towards David. Because at the end of the day, it was their tribe that provided the monarch.
Right.
And then they lost it. Now any of them who were intelligent should have known that they were never going to keep it. It was never, right, the Torah talks about Yehuda being the leader. So we had learned the Mepharshim had said, had Shaul not done what he did, perhaps there would have been some type of vice king, a viceroy, a prime minister, some secondary role that would have been, right, Yehuda would have been the king, and then Binyamin would have been in the second command, but that ship sailed. But since the moment is ripe for someone to cause trouble, there's at least, it ends up being a person from the tribe of Binyamin, and maybe you'd say that this person was just waiting for the right moment, or something along those lines. So here, Perachav Pasuk Aleph, we'll just read a few there. Visham, over there, or there happened to be, Nikra, a man who was called Ishbli Ail, Ushmo Sheva ben Bichri Ishimini. He's an Ishbli Yael, which we've had before, like baseless, low men. The Mitzudos Tzion here, I don't remember if he does in the other places that we had the term. He says, Bli Ol. Ol is a yoke. Bli Ol Shamayim, without the yoke of heaven, which is another way of saying a Rasha, a bad person. Right? It's clearly not an honor roll kid. Ushmo Shiva ben Bichri. And his name was Shiva ben Bichri Ishimini. He's a man from Binyamin. Vayiskab a shofar, and he blows a shofar, which is symbolic of a type of rebellion. Right? We saw that Avshalom did such a thing. Vayomer, mm-hmm. And he declared, Ein lanu chelek b'David. We have no portion in David. V'lo nachla lanu b'ven Yishai. We have no heritage or inheritance type of language with the son of Yishai? Ishlo alav Yisrael. Everyone should go back to their tents. Meaning, you should leave the presence of David. By leaving the presence of David, you are publicly displaying your rejection of David. Now, he didn't, what's clear from the pasuk is that he did not launch a rebellion about himself. What he launched was a rebellion where he rejected David. Most of the Mefarshim understand that his intentions were to, at some point, turn this into a full-blown rebellion where he would be the leader and he would maybe become the new king, and the position of the crown would go back from the tribe of Yehuda to its rightful place, in his perspective, with the tribe of Benjamin. But right now, he just wants the people to reject David. And it's interesting, while they said before, when they were making their argument, saying, we have a portion in the monarchy, in the melech, 10 times what you have. And now the declaration is that we have no chelek, specifically that type of language, we have no portion in David. But it's not just David. V'lo nachla lanu b'ven Yishai. So first of all, we saw to refer to David as Ben Yishai is derogatory. To call someone by his father's name is derogatory. But it also talks about David's father's house, which is representative of the tribe of Yehuda. That we're not just rejecting David as king, but we're rejecting Ben Yishai. Who's Yishai? We're rejecting the person of Yishai, not Yishai the person, but Yishai, which is a member of the tribe of Yehuda. And so it was almost like any son, right? Just like we originally saw that Yishai had many sons, and Shmuel thought it might have been a whole bunch of them before we finally got to David. But it's almost like whichever son of Yishai, whichever son of Yehuda you would put forth as being king, we're saying right now, we're making this declaration, Ein lanu chelek, we have no portion. Everyone should go to their tents. And this is happening right after this heated debate between the men of Yehuda and the men of Yisrael. It's exactly the right time for someone to make this rallying cry to reject David. Pasuk Beis, Vayal kol ish Yisrael, so the men of Israel get up and go, me'acharei David, from after David, acharei Shiva ben Bichri, they're following Shiva ben Bichri. Again, he has not announced himself as king, but he's kind of leading this. Maybe don't call it a rebellion, you call it like a rejection, which obviously it's the same thing. But at the same time that's happening, the ish Yehuda davku b'malkam, and the tribe of Yehuda, they cleave to their king, min ha'yarden, from the Yarden v'ad Yerushalayim, until Yerushalayim. So we have a real crisis on our hands, where the other tribes are rejecting David. Right, it's almost like David has hardly had them back in his hand, in his grasp, and now they're gone. But he still has a tribe of Yehuda, and as we'll see, next time, David in the beginning he focuses on getting back to Yerushalayim, and he focuses on the fact that he has a tribe of Yehuda, and maybe in David's eyes he recognizes that this is the way to start. Now, granted, there may be these deep-seated issues between Yehuda and the rest of the tribes, but David may be thinking back to how his kingdom was even started in the first place. His kingdom was started in the first place with only the tribe of Yehuda, and then it was able to extend from there. And it's almost like he needs to have things in order in his own house before he can go further. He needs to have the tribe of Yehuda under. He needs to be back in Yerushalayim. He needs to be. Leading from a position of power, and then when he's back to leading from a position of power, he can extend himself and he can take care of trying to unite the country, just like he did all that time ago. So that may be going through David's eyes. So while it's been, you would say, the return to Yerushalayim has been semi-ruined, he maybe doesn't want to ruin the whole thing. He wants to get back to Yerushalayim, get settled, and act from a position of power. So, Be'ez Hashem, next time we will continue.